Night and day, Christy and Paul chased Magog west. Christy had lost so much weight from exertion and skipping meals that her jumpsuit hung loosely on her frame. Paul got so worn down, he hardly even talked. Whenever she started to get overcome by dread that it was impossible to catch up to the fusion power train, she told herself it had been impossible to catch it the first time. Surely the odds were no worse now. But she almost packed it in when they overtook another party of technomads in what had been western Kansas. It was Christy's turn to sleep. She roused herself when she felt the yawl slowing. Twisting her head, she saw a red light, tiny but intense, blinking at them from some indefinable distance ahead. She reached for her M16, which lay on the platform beside her seat.
Easy. They're friends.
With the pistol grip in her hand, she started to ask him how he knew that. Then she set the blaster down. Moonlight as orange as fire filtered down through the clouds. It gave enough illumination as they approached for her to make out three tall-masted rail craft parked on a siding. They were each much larger than the Pol Yawl. She didn't bother asking how he knew he'd find them here. The technomads were friendlier than the ones they'd met in Tucumcari. They knew Paul, although under the name David this time. They seemed willing enough to accept Christy as his companion, whatever name he traveled under. It was Christy's turn to be reserved, although she hoped she didn't approach Brianna in haughtiness. She had half-consciously been putting together all kinds of wild stories she had heard in her youth, of bands of tinkers with fantastic gadgets and fantastic skills, which they often bartered for food and other supplies, who traveled by mysterious means, often at night. They tended to remain aloof from the affairs of the people they encountered, but they supposedly harbored a darker side as well. There were stories of missing children and midnight murders. Christy had tended to dismiss such tales as legends. Now she suspected some of them had really concerned the technomads. As usual, she was willing to follow Paul's lead, though, which in this case was into a building between the siding and the main track, where they had built a campfire at the end where the roof had fallen down, while Paul borrowed some of their tools to work on his yawl at the other end by some kind of artificial light. They had hot food and spearmint tea, which they shared with Christy as they talked.
You're after the great train, Magog?
The senior of the group, a robust elderly woman named Matilda, had merry red cheeks and white hair hanging in a pageboy bob from beneath a knit cap, into which had been worked little metallic-looking spangles or charms in the shapes of stars and crescent moons.
You've missed her, I'm afraid. She took the line due west about 50 miles back. She stopped for water at a villa day back. Locals say she was making for Denver.
Denver. The food Christy had already wolfed down turned to lead in her stomach. She slowly placed the plate between her feet. They had added miles to their chase, so many miles. If Magog had clear tracks, the train might be in Denver already. Pain hit her like a bullet in the gut. She stood up, only to double over. Her hair started to thrash. Matilda jumped to her feet.
Child, what's the matter?
She tried to take Christy's arm. The red-headed woman waved her off. The first thing to leap into Christy's mind had been dark legends of poison, but she already knew that wasn't the case. Paul appeared, wrench still in hand, looking concerned. She shook her head at him. He seemed to shimmer and fade, and her vision went somewhere else. In a moment, she was back to herself. The technomads had set her on a pack, safely away from the little fire. She tentatively accepted a water bottle. Her mouth was dry as a bone. The cool water soothed the pain in her belly, which was already fading. She drank the bottle dry and handed it back with thanks.
I'm all right now, I think.
You're a bit of a doomy, aren't you? I've seen such fits before.
Christy looked up sharply. In her altered state, she had committed the deadly sin of losing track of her long blaster. She still had the snubby tucked away, of course.
Oh, don't worry your head. We don't persecute espers any more than we do mutants. We don't hate anybody, although anyone who tries to impose on us lives to think better of it. Why, some of us might even be mutants, or espers, or even both. Imagine that, if you will.
Paul was hunkered anxiously at Matilda's side. She patted his shoulder.
Taos.
Beg pardon?
Taos. The train is going to Taos. I can catch her there. And something about flying. Me or Magog, I don't know which, or both.
I don't know much, Missy, but I do know trains, and I'm here to tell you. Railwags don't fly.
Maybe. I can't explain what I saw. Not even clear what it was, just... Oh, Gaia, I don't know. I'm hungry. Anybody know where I put my food?
The burrow was cool. The smell of earth and juniper fronds filled Ryan's nostrils and took the edge off the smoke of whatever pungent herbs the little ones were burning in the fire. The burrow was low, just high enough for him to sit cross-legged. The smoke collecting at the top was starting to get thick enough that it was surrounding the top of his head. He suspected that was the idea. Eventually, he'd breathe in a good dose of the fumes. The smoke itself wasn't psychoactive, though. Farwalker had explained it was meant to open and cleanse him, physically and spiritually. He hoped that wasn't going to involve puking. Farwalker's assistant, a young female, daubed paint from a tiny basket-covered pot on Ryan's belly. Despite himself, he gasped.
Ah, that's bastard cold.
We keep it buried in a deep burrow. Helps keep it fresh.
The assistant was drawing symbols on Ryan's chest. He looked down at himself. Upside down, they made no sense to him. He didn't think seeing them right side up would help.
What do these mean?
Nothing. They're just mumbo-jumbo to help get you in the properly mystical frame of mind. What you see in the world behind the world will be real. Real enough, anyway. But to see it, you have to let go of all resistance to fantasy.
That almost makes sense. I guess what you're doing is working.
Farwalker held up a pouch. It appeared to be made of coyote hide, with the silvery fur outside. Ryan wondered where the pacifist little ones got it. Well, dead coyotes weren't exactly rare.
Is this where I eat a magic mushroom?
Naturally.
Denver wasn't as bad as Kansas City. Most of the damage had been done by airbursts, which produced little fallout. The city had gotten a good dose of it anyway, courtesy of the hellacious hotspot 90 miles to the south, where the NORAD command center had been buried beneath Cheyenne Mountain. As JB explained to Leo the story that had come down to him, the U.S. had tried to build a stronghold impervious to nukes. The Russians had tried to prove it couldn't be done. That round, it seemed, had gone to the Ruskies, but they'd had to work for it. Overall, Denver wasn't too hot. The main rad danger came from localized pools of gamma emitters, basically spots rad dust had fallen and accumulated. This time, the tracks had survived all the way to their destination, a spur that led into the Federal Center itself. With a little help from the dozer attachment, they were clear enough to traverse. As they entered the huge, sprawling compound, moving scarcely faster than a man could walk, the general sat in his chair of command in his command center. Hubertus hovered behind his left shoulder. To the intel chief's immense but unvoiced disgust, Doc stood behind the general's right. All around were monitors, with techies monitoring what was to be seen on them. Doc looked here and there, and overall didn't derive much information from it all. Until...
Movement, sir! Got somebody flitting around in the rubble!
It was straight up noon, and fairly bright. They had the armored window shutters down, and were relying totally on the cameras and other sensors. The general was taking a risk barging straight in with his train without sending scouts ahead, but he believed in hedging his bets.
Right, Wynn. Stay sharp, everybody. Doc, Hubertus, action this day. I could welcome a good fight. Anything's better than this damned waiting.
I would venture to say, General, that a fight is precisely the sort of guest to wear out its welcome rather quickly.
Ridiculous.
Be quiet, Hubertus.
Here!
The tech swung his pickup so that the screen was centered on a puff of white smoke from a vertical V-shaped gap in a wall. The smoke dissipated quickly in the stiff breeze. The tech fiddled with his controls. A pale figure began to resolve out of the shadows, beyond the thinning smoke.
Tell turret Bravo 1 he's free to neutralize that nuke suck when he gets a target. All other stations hold your fire unless you perceive an immediate threat to the train. And I don't mean a kid with a rock.
The image gained clarity. It showed a figure in a hooded white jacket of some kind, possibly a rain slick, frantically pushing a ramrod down an upturned long blaster barrel with a black-gloved hand. The features were indistinguishable shadows within the hood, but when it glanced nervously at the rail wag, Doc saw glints as from a pair of goggles or dark glasses.
Magog 1, Bravo 1, target acquired.
Bravo 1, Magog 6, you are cleared to fire.
Bravo 1 was armed with a Ma Deuce. Doc felt the familiar slow-paced pounding vibrating up through the floor as the turret gunner squeezed off a three-round burst. The figure on screen simply went away. The techies began to cheer and stamp and pump their fists and exchange high fives. A somewhat uncalled-for display, Doc thought, for an armored train that had just vanquished a primitive with a musket.
What in the hell was that?
Long as it dies when you shoot it, Win, who cares? And if a front-stuffing charcoal burner's the best they got to offer, this'll be a breeze. Step it up, driver, we're almost there.
The buildings fell away to either side. What Doc took for the center of the compound seemed to be an open space several hundred yards wide. Most of it appeared to have been paved at one time, although between years of frost heave and vegetation pushing up from below, it was impossible to be sure. The sight lines were still clear all the way across, though. Doc leaned toward the central screen at the front of the compartment, the largest display in the room.
I say, General, but is that
Wait,
not...
Reverse! Reverse! Reverse!
A tank?